You got the fucking creakiest floorboards I've ever heard.
Creaky ass floor. I like it. My yoga lady on YouTube, Yoga with Adrienne, she has a creaky floor. And whenever like she hits the right spot when we're doing like down dog or something, she'll be like, "There you are, creaky old floor. I've missed you."
Yeah, but she's Adrian. She can just pass that off. We're just a shitty podcast.
Yeah. I don't, is it shitty?
Yeah, I mean, shitty in like the good way
In
that you want your
the way that
podcast
we're
to
in
be.
my roommate's basement room recording.
Hello,
Like
listeners.
literally the washing machine is on the other side of that
We
wall.
are here to give you some knowledge for your ears.
I don't really care if you take knowledge away. I feel like
Okay,
Damon
I
cares.
really care. I want everyone to learn every single one of my drink recipes is really important to me.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but for the like law cases, for the drunk law school part of it, I really don't care if people
No, it's probably best if you don't take very much away from that because your understanding will probably be of minimal quality.
Yeah, hey, how dare you?
I'm not saying that your understanding is of minimal quality. I'm saying that I don't really trust that the combination of alcohol, us being jokey on this podcast, and people listening to this on like their commute where they're definitely not paying full
I really want to
attention.
learn about con law. This is not
No, you've come to the wrong
This
podcast,
is
my
not, guys, this is
friends.
not educational. We are not tagging it on the educational
This is
category
a
for
comedy
podcasts.
podcast. Don't get it
And
twisted.
even then, comedy, such a subjective field. I mean, are we comical? We were
We
talking about this
better
earlier
be, otherwise we have no purpose for existing.
today.
This is Drunk Law School,
Hey,
everyone. Hey,
hello.
semester two,
Hey, that's
class
great.
number two.
Yes, constitutional law.
Right, but
What?
before we get to that,
What?
don't forget.
What are you drinking?
What are we drinking tonight? Megan, what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking the last, I'm gonna say 7 sips, maybe more, but it's not very much. It's like one gulp of a Kentucky Mule,
Very nice.
which Daniel made for me.
Yes. So a mule, generally speaking, is a mixture of a base spirit, ginger beer, and lime. That's sort of the thing.
Very easy.
You will see it served in a tin or a copper cup. A Moscow mule is made with vodka, hence the Moscow
Vodka.
part, vodka.
Vodka.
A Kentucky mule is simply a Moscow mule with bourbon instead of vodka. Kentucky being the heartland of American bourbon distilling. That's where it has historically tended to happen. Bourbon is an Appalachian spirit. Kentucky is sort of the southwestern edge of Appalachia, very similar to moonshine, which listeners may be familiar with.
Bourbon is similar to moonshine.
Yes, it is.
Wow, moonshine must be pretty good.
And it's also illegal.
No, I know. We read about this in criminal law.
We can talk about this on a separate episode.
That's right.
So Megan has been drinking that. I have been sipping on a recipe of my own creation.
Oh, it's got a great name.
It's called a Bee's Knuckles, which is a modification of another classic recipe similar to the Kentucky Mule being a modification of a Moscow Mule. This is a modification of a drink called a Bee's Knees, which is what you would call a simple sour. So it is basically three ingredients: gin,
Yes, I love gin.
honey, and lemon.
I have to say, Bee's Knees is one of my all-time favorite drinks.
This is like a classic drink that people have been having forever. It's really just yummy. It's so good. So a Bee's Knuckles is a Bee's Knees made with bourbon and a dash of sriracha
Oh,
for a little heat.
I liked that.
Yeah.
When I didn't realize there was sriracha in it.
Yes. If you want to find the recipe for a Bee's Knuckles, I will post it on our Instagram page so
He
that
did
you
make
can
it
see
up.
it.
This isn't a chef's original here.
It is very popular. I have served it at many parties and it has always been a favorite. So now it is yours.
Especially if you don't like gin, because apparently gin is a very, quite like tequila, it's very polarizing.
My response to people who don't like gin or to people who don't like tequila is why discriminate? All the alcohols are great. They have
Or
their own
bad, depending on your experiences with
They have
them.
their own different characteristics, but they're all beautiful and they're all wonderful
Right. But
to get and
sometimes
drink.
people, and I'm just saying generally, sometimes people might have had experiences where it was the summer between their freshman and sophomore year of college, and they were in the basement of their best friend's home at home. And they maybe accidentally one time had 7 shots of dark tequila sitting down in 1 hour with no food. And they licked the salt and had the lime. And then when they decided to stand up and go get snacks, the standing up didn't really happen that well. And then they had the spins. And this is just generalizing. Could be anybody.
Right, of course.
Maybe they had the spins for the rest of the night, and maybe they were throwing up and they never really went to sleep. And then it was 5 a.m. and it was the worst day of their life the next day. So maybe that's why some people don't like to get
right.
I don't know. I'm just
right. Fair point. This is why I advise, even as somebody who likes to make drinks, drinking in moderation. We never overindulge on this show. We have just the right amount, I would say.
Yeah, but everyone's got their own weights, you know?
Yeah, you got to figure it out. It's very important.
Figure it out.
So in your second semester of law school, you take a variety of courses.
We do.
We've covered one of them.
Crime law.
Criminal law.
Nothing like cannibalism to get you started.
Don't worry. We will be coming back to more of that later this
season.
Truly
the first case that I read in criminal law was that case.
It's really, they start you off dark.
They do.
What class are we going to next?
Constitutional law, which I think is really compelling.
Bum, 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 bum,
bum. That's only something someone on the East Coast would like think of when I say criminal law.
It's the shores of Tripoli. Everybody knows that song.
Yeah, I know. Like, I am aware of, but like, nobody in Iowa would be like, let me just sing the shores of Tripoli.
Right. Well, that's what I think of when I think about constitutional law is the founding document of this country, the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It is the supreme law of the land.
Yes. And we treat it that way.
We do.
And in fact, this case I'm about to read you is the most important case in constitutional law.
Oh.
Yes.
What is it that I feel like I should know?
Well, Daniel, if you must know.
I must know eventually.
This is the classic case of Marbury versus Madison.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
And you've read this case, right?
Yeah, I took AP U.S. History in 10th grade.
But didn't you take First Amendment or something in college?
We didn't talk about this case.
You didn't talk about Marbury?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay.
There was too much to discuss with the First Amendment.
That's true. And this is not a First Amendment case. So this case was decided in 1803. Daniel.
Oh, damn. We're throwing it back.
Daniel.
We're throwing it back.
So 1789 was when the Constitution entered force.
So this case is happening less than 15 years after America, has its basic laws in place.
Yeah, truly. So this is the most important case in constitutional law because it established the principle of judicial review for the Supreme Court of the United States.
What the fuck is that?
Okay, so judicial review is the principle that enables the court to be able to have the power to review a case.
Any court?
Judicial review in general, yes. So in every court, every time you hear a piece of really any argument or any case,
right,
you're going to have, you know, in all of your briefs to the court, you're going to have this section called statement of review, where the review is like the court is sitting here reviewing your case. Like, that's what the court does.
Right. So this case said courts can review.
For the Supreme Court.
Oh.
It's judicial review for the Supreme Court.
Ah.
Yeah, which is the only court that can make constitutional, for the United States Constitution,
right,
statements and judgments.
So this is the court that says the Supreme Court reviews the Constitution,
right,
and constitutional cases. Yeah. That's what this is about.
I mean, to be fair, district courts and appellate, to be fair, district courts and appellate courts also, in federal circles,
right,
also talk about the United States Constitution and decide whether or not things are constitutional. But in terms of essentially striking down federal laws that have to do with this, the Supreme Court is the strongest place.
Did we have, at that time, did we have a strongly developed district and appellate court system, or was it just there's one court for government stuff, and it's the Supreme Court?
That's a great question. I don't know 100%, but the sense that I've gotten from reading cases that date back as early as this, mm-hmm, and then kind of developing along the way, kind of looking at their civil or their criminal procedures, so how they went through the courts. Some of these, it looks like they just skipped over circuits. So right. I'm sure, we barely had 13 states at this point,
right,
what circuit are you going to have? But I'm not 100% sure, but I do know we had definitely fewer courts than we have now.
Fair enough.
So judicial review, as Wikipedia says, means that American courts have the power to strike down laws, statutes, and some governmental actions that violate the Constitution of the United States. So this one is a biggie. That's why it's the most important.
Very important.
Do you want to hear the facts of the case?
Yeah, hit me.
The facts being the background. Okay, so this all started from an incident that occurred as a part of this rivalry going on between John Adams, who was the
second president of the United States.
Right. And
yes.
Right. And he was on the side, if you have ever listened to Hamilton, which you have not of your own volition all the way through, but he was on the side of Alexander Hamilton and the Federalist Party. So this is like a big rivalry between John Adams, who was outgoing during this time as president, and the incoming president, who was number three.
Jefferson.
Yes, Thomas.
Yes. Oh.
Who was like the original Republican, right? So he was the Democratic Republican Party. That's who he founded.
Right.
And that is essentially like kind of more conservative, state focused, not
right.
Federalist, nationalist type deal. Mm-hmm. So Adams had his term and he had lost to Jefferson in 1800. So at the time, Jefferson, you know, during the Revolution, he was off being the ambassador to France and, like, really rallying the support between France and the United States.
Yeah, Marquis de Lafayette.
That's right.
What's up, homie?
We love him. So he came back, and then he was rallying up this all of this Virginia support because
right.
from Virginia, I mean, there's Monticello's down there, and that's his big plantation.
Right.
So he became very popular, and he became the next president.
Mm-hmm.
And so just, like, literally 2 days before Adams' term is to end, he decides that he wants to really stick it to Jefferson.
So he's, like, the lamest of ducks at this point.
Yeah. But he's still president. He's still
still the president. That's
2 days before his term ends and power is handed over to Jefferson.
Right.
Adams decides, listen, I'm going to stock all the judicial positions that I can with my guy and really just stick Jefferson right. with this Federalist.
A bunch of judges that he doesn't like.
Right. All these Federalist judges. Federalist being the political party. So he appointed several of them to be circuit judges and justices of the peace in an attempt to basically piss off Jefferson and the Democratic Republican Party. The United States Senate, who's apparently super on his side, like quickly confirmed them, which is amazing. What does the Senate do in 2 days? Like, what do they do in 2 days?
Apparently a lot back in the day.
Because there weren't that many of them.
Not that much anymore, guys.
Yeah. So when Adams left and Jefferson was inaugurated,
mm-hmm.
A few of these new judges' commissions still had not been delivered. So the way that you do these commissions back then, I don't know if it's the same now, is you would, as a president, you would, you know, suggest these commissions, you'd send it to the Senate, they would approve it, the approvals would be sent to the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State would be in charge of delivering the commissions and essentially formalizing the process.
Oh, yeah.
The Secretary of State...
Doesn't work that way anymore.
Okay, so guess who the Secretary of State was under Adams?
Oh.
He's a famous Chief Justice, happens to write the opinion of this case.
Oh, wait. It's on the tip of my tongue. John Marshall.
That's right.
Yes!
So,
thank you, U.S. history.
So John Marshall was Secretary of State under Adams, who's outgoing at this point.
Yeah.
Immediately becomes, somehow, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. I'm sure he went to the Supreme Court.
Oh, yay. Oh, yay.
Oh, yay. That's right. So, I mean, this is in 1803. The election was in 1800. All this happened in March of 1801. So I'm sure he had some sort, like, he was just on the Supreme Court, and then he became Chief Justice. I don't really know how that works. But he ends up writing the opinion of this case. Can we talk about a conflict of interest? Back to it. So, Marshall.
Did conflicts of interest even exist in the 1800s? That's my question.
Only like 8 people were running anything back then.
Right. So. Government was like a little bit incestuous, and that was just sort of how it was.
So,
and it still is.
In his position in the Adams government, he was supposed to deliver all these commissions, but he couldn't because he didn't have that much time before his commission immediately ended upon the inauguration of Jefferson. So
right.
That's why not all these commissions were delivered. I'm sure.
Okay.
I'm sure he felt like pretty bad about it. And so he was like, guys, I got this. I'll write the opinion on this case. So the guy who is the plaintiff in this case
mm-hmm.
is one of the guys whose commission was not delivered.
Okay.
And his name is William Marbury.
Okay.
So there's a lot of M's happening here. There's Marbury, Madison, and Marshall.
Oh, so that's too many
M's for me. The
plaintiff
is Marbury. He is the angry dude whose commission was never delivered, so he never got to be, you know, an appointed judge.
Can you imagine that? Just like being like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a judge of the United States. And then after 2 days, it's like, nope, sorry.
Right. So
it's over.
He's really mad. And this is Marbury versus Madison. So Madison.
Is he the next Secretary of State for Jefferson?
Yes.
Oh, wow. I am on a roll tonight.
And Madison.
Yes.
Madison is.
Oh, yeah. Madison goes on to become president after Jefferson, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he's the fourth president
okay.
of the United States. So we're all these players. They all got backgrounds. They're all people. And then Marshall is the other M. He was the Secretary of State under Adams.
Right. And then
is now the Chief
currently
Justice.
Currently the Chief. Wow.
And he wrote the opinion. So all these dudes know each other.
This is quite a crossover episode.
Yeah. But crossover just within itself.
Yeah.
It's like intra-crossing over. So William Marbury, the snubbed appointee, mm-hmm. was a Maryland businessman, and he had been a strong supporter of Adams in the Federalist Party. And Madison, the new Secretary of State under Jefferson, refused mm-hmm. to deliver his commission because Madison still could.
Right.
Is the thing. Like, it just goes to the office of the Secretary of State.
Right.
It doesn't have to go to specifically which secretary it is.
So what's happening here is, for whatever reason, the commission doesn't get delivered to Marbury before John Adams' presidency ends.
Yeah.
And then Thomas Jefferson becomes the president, and he, via James Madison, who's now taken over as Secretary of State, has the possible option to deliver this commission and make Marbury a judge, like was theoretically supposed to happen. But it doesn't happen.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
So this is basically like two older, accomplished white dudes who helped found the United States are just poking each other in the eyeballs. Like, they're just like, I want to stack the courts. And I can stack the courts. I want to do it.
It's kind of hilarious that to think about the fact that the entire structure of like American judicial superiority arranges basically from a petty fight.
Well, this is true. However, I will say that the entire arrangement and structure of American judicial authority stems from the United States Constitution. But still, under that, it's right. just all
but
petty fights.
But the fact that the Supreme Court can do what it does today mm-hmm. is because two American political big shots decided that they wanted to have a slap fight with each other.
Yes. And part of it was
that is absurd.
I mean, part of it's rightly so. Like, Marbury's like, I worked my ass off to get this position. I probably donated a shit ton of money, which is not really working your ass off. But, you know, I did my due diligence to get this position, and I deserve this position. And I technically, like, it was passed on time. It should be delivered to me.
Wow.
And so Marbury filed the lawsuit just in the Supreme Court. So let's talk about different types of jurisdiction, right? Different types of jurisdiction exist for different types of cases that are brought.
Okay.
So you have original jurisdiction, which right. I think I've maybe alluded to a little bit last season. Jurisdiction is your ability to preside over a case if you're a right. court. And original jurisdiction is this court has the ability to preside over this case upon first hearing. So this case doesn't have to go through another court before right. it gets to us. We're not an appeals court of any kind. Like, the Supreme Court is an appeals court, mm-hmm. except for it does have original jurisdiction in some cases that are set out in the Constitution.
Okay.
So ones involving treaties, stuff like that. They have original jurisdiction in, or right. like disputes between states. So like if Iowa sues Maryland or something like that. So it's very important to know that Marbury filed this lawsuit in the Supreme Court. So he's like, you have original jurisdiction to hear this claim.
Right.
And that is what the court is actually looking at.
Okay.
This case is a straw man case. It's not about the merits for this case. This case was an opportunity for the court to decide what they can hear and why. And the court was just looking for a case to do this with. Like, Marshall had been looking for a couple of years, being like, this one's not good, this one's
not good. Marshall's kind of like, he is like a very devious thinker guy.
But that's great because he knew that this decision had to be made. Like, he probably, and the court in the preceding like 12 years had probably been like, we're not sure, we're not, every time they get to a new case, being like, can we hear this on original jurisdiction?
Right, right.
And so this case kind of allowed them to take the issue and not even argue on the merits of the issue, but argue on, can we even hear this case in the first place?
All right. Well, can they?
So there were three issues in this case. The first one is whether Marbury is entitled to his commission. The second issue is, if he is, then what remedy is available for him?
Okay.
And the third issue is, can the Supreme Court grant that remedy? So that's the jurisdictional issue.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Are these listed in order?
Yes.
Why doesn't can the court deliver the remedy come mm-hmm. first?
Well, this is something we talked about in class. Because the first two issues are basically just addressing, you know, like, okay, fine. If we have to hear this case, we know we have to hear it on the merits. we'll answer the questions if we were able to hear it on the merits. But the last question, that's why it's kind of a straw man case. You're right. That question should go first. But because that is really what the case was about, they're reserving so much more space in the case to talk about it that it allows them to be like, if this is the case and this is the case, then we can't hear this. You know, we can't deliver.
I see. So they're basically, that question should go first. But if the court is going to use this case to set up its future power, it has to go last.
Yeah, because they want to be able to like use it as like, this is the main thing that we're talking about.
Right, okay,
given
all right.
Given these other facts.
This John Marshall guy is a devious motherfucker.
I actually have to say, I love reading Marshall opinions. I feel like such a nerd saying that. But like, his writing is so compelling and just very easy to understand in a very eloquent way. I really enjoy reading his writing. It's very clear like what his convictions are. Mm. So,
all right.
On these three issues, we'll tackle the first one first. Whether Marbury is entitled to this commission? The answer is yes.
Yeah, I think that should be plainly obvious.
And some of it's technical stuff. So he has a right to his commission because there is no requirement constitutionally for delivery of the commission to validate the
appointment. Once a vote is held, that's it.
Yeah, so to deny it would be to violate a legal right. And that's really important to know. There's a difference between a legal question and a political question.
Yes.
Legal questions, the court can preside over and can make decisions about. Political questions are also known as non-justiciable political questions. A non-justiciable question means like we as the justices cannot answer this question because it is political in nature and we are inherently an apolitical body.
Well, on the other hand, some people such as myself would argue that everything is a political question. And if you refuse to admit that, you are fooling yourself.
So on issue two, if he's entitled to his commission, which he is by the Constitution, by the laws that be, what legal remedy is he afforded? So the law does provide a remedy for legal rights.
It does.
Yeah. So he is entitled to his position. That's the remedy. It's you get to have your position.
Okay. It's a little bit tautological.
Well, I mean, it's essentially specific performance, which is the type of damage in lawsuits. You either get money damages or an injunction, which is stopping somebody from doing something, or specific performance, which is enforcing somebody doing something.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. So the third issue is,
right,
if he is entitled to the commission and there's a remedy for him, can the Supreme Court grant this remedy?
Right.
So you're right. This question should have been first. This question should have been, regardless of how this case comes out, can we enforce what we decide?
Because if they can't enforce it, there's no point.
Right. But the way that Marshall is setting up this opinion is he is essentially making a little like thought game for himself.
Okay.
Like he's like, okay, if he isn't, you know, if this is true and this is true, can this be true? Mm-hmm. Because can this be true? This third part is the part that is the most important and the most essential constitutional foundational question that he's
trying to answer. Right. The first two parts are kind of trivial, actually.
They are, because it's just hypotheticals for him. Even though it's a real situation,
right,
he's using them as like, okay, we can finally dig into this like really like theoretical sub issue that has practical realities to enforce.
Nobody's changing anything with their answers to the first two questions.
Exactly. So when Marbury was bringing this case, in order to bring a case, most of the time you have to cite to some sort of statute or regulation that supports what you're saying. You know, like, you assaulted me when you spat on me pursuant to section 45 of the Constitution of America or whatever.
Yeah.
So Marbury is citing the Constitution, and he's also citing section 13 of the Judiciary Act of 1789.
Oh, so there's a law about this as well.
There's a law that allows the Supreme Court to grant what's known as writs of mandamus.
Oh.
Or singularly would be a writ of mandamus.
Mandamus sounds like mandate.
Yeah. It's literally from the same Latin word.
Oh.
Yeah. So it's basically, mandamus is a conjugation of mand whatever. And it means we order.
Yes.
So writ of mandamus is a fancy way of saying a court order.
Yeah.
So a writ of mandamus is specifically for government agencies and officials and employees and maybe some other organizations. But for our purposes, it would be government employees. So the Secretary of State to carry out their duties as they are prescribed.
Stop dilly-dallying.
Like literally, It is
pitter patter.
It is truly the like real life version of you had one job.
Okay, like, I
that's
like that.
What like that's what it is.
That's
do,
good.
Do your fucking job.
Okay.
So when Marbury, the snubbed judge or non-judge, was bringing his suit, he's saying, "I am asking you for a writ of mandamus. I am asking you to tell the Secretary of State to do his fucking job and give me my position
in accordance with
in
this
accordance
law.
With Section 13 of the Judiciary Act of 1789."
Now I'm getting okay.
And so SCOTUS is like, so SCOTUS being Supreme Court of the United States.
Yes.
SCOTUS is like, great, you are entitled to your commission. There is a remedy, but we can't give it to you.
Why not?
So this case is...
That's fucking sad.
It's super, super important because they have...
Can you imagine being this guy and being like, you're right, but we can't help you. Yeah. Sorry. We are the Supreme Court. We're the biggest court of all the courts and we ain't got jack shit for you.
And the reason is because there is this... sub issue that's underlying all of this.
Oh no.
Which is okay, this Section 13 of the Judiciary Act, which, you know, allows someone to bring a question involving a writ of mandamus. They're asking for a writ of mandamus. Can the Supreme Court uphold that rule by enforcing it? Is it constitutional? This is like one of the first times that the Supreme Court has ever had to deal with this section of the Judiciary Act. And they aren't sure, looking at the language, do we actually have the power to do this under the Constitution? Because the Supreme Court, you know, oh yeah, it's
been right, they all have limited good, powers, though.
But they have limited powers under the Constitution.
No.
So even if you are the Supreme Court and you are like, I'm the most powerful court in all the land, it is truly the only court that is actually named in the Constitution.
Right.
It is the only court that the framers built, and every other court is created afterwards. It's not included in the Constitution.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Supreme Court inherently tied to the Constitution, even though it's a super big fucking deal.
Right.
It is still, you know, they still have to follow the rules.
Right.
The rules are the Constitution.
Right.
So when looking at how they can enforce remedies, how they can, you know, make it all better, essentially, for the plaintiffs or the defendants.
All better.
Slap a Band-Aid on it. They can't slap this Band-Aid on it because turns out this Band-Aid's fucking unconstitutional.
Damn.
This writ of mandamus was instituted by an act that was unconstitutional.
That's really sad.
The reason why it was unconstitutional is that the Judiciary Act, Section 13, too broadly enhanced the powers of the Supreme Court.
It was, as you would say, overbroad.
It was overbroad. And because it was 1789, it's like the same year that the Constitution is enacted, but like afterwards, you know, I think that the framers probably wanted to tack on some more shit that they couldn't all agree on for the Constitution. I'm just spitballing here, but I think that's my idea. But on review, the Supreme Court was like, this actually doesn't align at all with what you guys wrote in the Constitution. And we are just mandated to look at the Constitution. So we can't actually grant the writ of mandamus because the statute that says that we can is unconstitutional because it allows us to have too many powers that we can't have. Like when looking at Article 3 of the Constitution, which is what lays out the judiciary branch specifically for the Supreme Court, their powers, it gives you very, very limited things.
Right.
And we can only stick to those things. So we can't issue this under original jurisdiction. We can't issue a writ of mandamus if someone brings a case to us as the first court that's hearing it, because that's outside what the Constitution says that we can do. Mm-hmm. It says we can only have original jurisdiction for these five scenarios. This is not one of those scenarios. Mm-hmm. So we can't issue this writ. And therefore, Section 13 of the Judiciary Act is unconstitutional.
Right.
And this whole decision hinges on, can they even decide if it's unconstitutional? And the court says, yes, we can decide it because this is a legal question. It is not a political question. Uh-huh. Us deciding on if something is constitutional or not has everything to do with understanding the laws of the United States and understanding the framers' intent in creating the Constitution and has very, very little, if nothing, to do with the politics of the day.
Right.
So like I said, Marshall has been looking, or just the court in general, has been looking for a way to firmly and concretely establish its ability to review constitutionality of laws passed by Congress or lower.
Because there's kind of like a judicial power vacuum and nobody's right.
I mean, like it's like when you're a toddler and you put training wheels on your bike.
Yeah.
You know, your two training wheels are kind of bouncing back and forth a little bit. Like, who's in charge here? Is it the big wheels or the little wheels? Right. We're not really sure. So that's, I mean, we are a nation on training wheels at this point. We're truly not even 20 years
in. Fair enough.
Like, I currently am older than the nation was at this time when they made this decision. So Marshall's like, we got to get this out of the fucking way. Because maybe there had been controversies before about, like, is this constitutional? Who could decide that? So the reason why this case is so important is not only does it, you know, talk about an important appointment, which doesn't end up being that important, like down the line.
Who's Marbury again? Nobody remembers him.
We only remember you because of this case.
Yeah.
But Marshall takes this as an opportunity to seize life by the whatever you want to say and say, we have the ability as a court from the Constitution, from Article 3, Section 2, to review issues involving the Constitution. Right. And that means to determine if laws that are passed by Congress are constitutional.
Right. It's almost as if he sort of stumbled upon it. Like, he was looking at this guy's Marbury's request for a writ of mandamus. And he looked at the law and he looked at the Constitution and he said, wait, there's a conflict. And the Constitution is supposed to be supreme. And we're the only ones who are looking at this right now. So I guess that means that we have to say that this law is unconstitutional. And if we're saying that, that means that our whole job is to say what's unconstitutional or not.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
As I understand it.
It's kind of,
as a not completed con law
student. It's kind of like he stumbled into this field and he was like, oh, wait a minute. This is beautiful.
I know. I kind of, when I'm explaining this case, I feel like that guy from that show where it's a meme and he's just like got this board and all these like pins with yarn attached to it.
Yes.
And he's like, what is that from?
Is that
from Arrested Development or is that
maybe
from something else?
I don't know.
But that's how I feel when I'm explaining con law.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but this is the origin, is it's like this moment where Marshall realizes that there's a clash between the Constitution and the law.
Yeah.
And then he takes that opportunity to change the course of American history.
Yeah. And I mean, in a small part, change the course of this law. I mean, this was the first time that the Supreme Court ever really declared its power of judicial review.
Right.
And that's super important because judicial review is the whole, it's the whole mechanism that allows you, it's the key to the ignition of the car of the Supreme Court of the United States.
I love that.
If you were the car of the Supreme Court of the United States, what would you be?
You know,
I feel like it would be a Mercedes. I don't know why, but then my mind.
I think it needs to, like, you need a combination of power and grace.
Okay. I mean, Mercedes.
yeah. It's so stereotypical.
Like, Subaru is not going to cut it. I'm sorry. No. I own a Sub. I love it, but.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else that we need to know about this before we move on?
God, I mean, I'm sure that there's 1,000 other things con law snobs are shouting through their earbuds right now. But that's the long and short of it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a really important case. And it's amazing that, you know, these tiny fact patterns that end up having very little bearing on, like, the history of the United States end up completely determining how we function as a nation 230 years later.
Wow. That's amazing. Okay, great.
I guess it's 217 now.
Sure.
Okay. So that's Marbury versus Madison. Did I fuck with your brain enough during that?
Yeah, my head's still spinning a little bit.
I know. Well, you can find us on Instagram.
Yes.
At Drunk Law School.
That's true.
And you can also find us on Gmail, drunklawschoolpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. Tell us what you think. I'm sure that we didn't get this quite right. Constitutional law is very particular. It's very precise.
Yep.
With that precision often arising out of very much imprecision, as we encountered in this situation. We would like to hear from you if you've been involved in any, like, legal cases, or if you have questions that you want us to answer. Like, if you have a random legal question and you're like, hey, can you do an explainer on the Fifth Amendment? We'll try.
I mean, listen. I don't know that I could do a great job on it, but I could definitely, like,
we'll give you what we got.
Yes.
That's what we'll give you.
No legal advice, but maybe commentary.
Yeah, commentary for sure. I love commentary.
That's all I have.
Before we go, I would like to say that you can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify, Google Play, Apple, all that stuff. You can also support this podcast by going to anchor.fm/drunklawschool. You can, if you think that we're doing a good job right now and you're enjoying us in your quarantine, we would appreciate your support. So if you like this show, support us, tell your friends. That would be really, really cool. We would appreciate it.
And cheers to everybody out there. Stay sane, stay safe, stay healthy, stay curious, stay informed.
Yeah.
You know, do your best. We are.
That's right.
And we're trying.
Here's your moment of zen. And
with that,
we will see you next class for Drunk Law School.
That's right. See you guys.
Bye.
Hey, everyone. We just want to remind you that we're doing a moment of action as postscript to our show in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement lately. If you don't already know, on August 23rd in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Jacob Blake, an unarmed Black man, was shot 7 times in the back by Kenosha police as he tried to enter his car with his kids inside. He's currently paralyzed and recovering in the hospital. There have been ongoing protests for social justice across the country, including the 57th anniversary of the March on Washington, which happened this weekend. We urge our listeners to call the Wisconsin Department of Justice, which is investigating this incident, at 608-266-1221 and continue pushing for justice for Jacob. Also, you can donate to the Milwaukee Freedom Fund to support protesters. We'll post links to all these resources in the episode description.